Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to DAVE, the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program on Health Star Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Join Dave and his guests now and every Tuesday at noon Pacific on Radio Star Worldwide as they share practice tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help get you through this day so you can live your caregiver life more fully and abundantly. Now, here's your caregiver host, Dave Nassani.
From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally to the famous, the absolutely worldwide famous Radio Star Worldwide Radio Network. Boy, there's a lot of radios in there. Yes, folks, I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving, and we are going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. It even sounds nasty, doesn't it? Well, it is nasty, and believe me, you do not want to have caregiver burnout. Now, we have an exciting show planned for you today with my lovely co-host, who is not here, Adrienne Gruberg, because she just couldn't make it. Sometimes that happens. So it's just me and Sammy. Say hello, Sammy. And my guest, Elaine Pereira, author of... Elaine, what's the name of your book?
I Will Never Forget, A Daughter's Story of Her Mother's Arduous and Humorous Journey Through Dementia.
How touching. So stay tuned. You will not want to miss this show. Hey, if you're new to the show, we get many new listeners every week, especially from the Blab Television Network. I'm your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every single kind. And one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring, they're selfless, they're sacrificial. Wonderful traits, right? Oh, yeah, and they have this real bad habit of being very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Folks, come on, learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember, every time you board a plane, they say, in the unlikely event of an emergency, put your oxygen mask on first before you help your loved one with their mask, because they know from experience that if you don't, you will most likely black out. And then you won't be of any good to anybody, especially that little kid sitting next to you. And guess what? Caregivers are exactly the same way. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this other thing, like we needed another thing, called the grief process. Ouch. Unfortunately, folks, there is only one way out of the grief process. You got to go through it. Can't go over it, around it, under it. You got to go through it. And we will help you, hopefully, through your grief and your loss if you happen to feel like, you know, you're stuck. Well, I want to thank my last week's guest, Janie Becker, for her wonderful interview. And you can see that interview and all of our interviews, including this interview, on my website, caregiverscaregiver.com. That's caregivers with an S, caregiver without an S.com. And while you're there, you'll see something saying, are you a candidate for burnout? Click here, give me your email, and take this quiz. And we'll let you know if you are or not. Of course, you probably already know that. And just for doing that, I'm going to be Mr. Nice Guy. I'm going to send you a copy of my one arm, one leg, 100 words, overcoming unbelievable hardships, getting rave reviews still after 3 years of being out. And I'm sorry, but that's a great deal. Donald Trump would even think that was a good deal. All right, enough of that. Elaine, welcome to the show. And thank you so much for agreeing to this interview. I really...
I appreciate every opportunity to talk about caregiving and expand Alzheimer's awareness.
Okay. We are, you're cutting in and out, so.
Yeah, you are too. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about caregiver burnout, and I welcome every chance to help advance Alzheimer's awareness.
Call it a better quality, okay?
Okay.
So, tell us a little bit about yourself and just who is Elaine Pereira, and am I pronouncing that correctly?
Pretty close. Pereira. Yes. Pereira.
That's like Indian, isn't it?
No, it's Portuguese.
Portuguese. I knew an Indian guy, and his name was Pereira. And so I thought that maybe you married an Indian person.
Nope. He's Portuguese and Italian. So,
well, that's a nice combination.
Most of the time.
So tell us, take a couple of minutes and just introduce us. Who are you, Elaine?
Okay. I'm an occupational therapist. My primary focus was with pediatrics, actually, in the schools. And I have a bachelor's and master's from Wayne State University. I have twin daughters who are now 38. One's an attorney, the other going back to school to get her educational doctorate this fall. So I guess I'll be doing a little more babysitting. She has three kids, so I'm grateful to have her back in the country. She lived in Germany with her husband and family for many years, but they're back now. I'm married. We have fur kids in addition to our own biological children. So I have two dogs, and we have two dogs and two cats. I had a great childhood. So as things declined decades later with my wonderful mom, then I took advantage of the opportunity to draft a story about her of interest, I think, to everyone.
All right. Don't you just love live radio?
I've not done one like this before. This one's had some challenges. I'm glad you know what to
really?
Do.
And you look so nice. I mean, you just woke up, threw on something, and there
right.
you are.
We're in a different time zone. I've been up for a while.
Oh, are you on the East Coast?
Yes.
Or Central? Oh, okay.
Oh, Eastern Standard Time, yeah, Michigan.
Okay. So I didn't know you were an occupational therapist.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, my wife had a stroke about 20 years ago, and she recently had a fall in her electric wheelchair, went off a curb.
Oh, jeez.
Didn't have her seatbelt on because she never listens to me. So she broke her fibia and tibia, and so she just got her cast off for 6 weeks. It was on.
Geez.
And so the nurse who was bathing her in the shower, you know, she had to put just a little weight on her weak side because she was paralyzed on the right side. And she couldn't do it. And it's like, oh, no, she needs more therapy. And she almost slipped and her ankle looks a little swollen now, a little black and blue. And I'm telling her, we need to get an X-ray, make sure that all that hardware in there is still. And she goes, no. So I called the doctor, and I'm still waiting for his call back. So anyway, enough about me and my issues. what brought you to writing a book about your mom's journey with dementia? Incidentally, my mom also had dementia. We recently lost her last September.
I'm
very familiar with that journey.
Yeah,
well, it's a good thing because she wanted to go for a long time. You know, she just and I would want to go too if I was going to get to that point.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And I knew my mom inside out. So although I didn't have to make end-of-life decisions literally, I could embrace her ending knowing that she literally was in a better place. So the book came about because my mom had been a kind, accomplished, vibrant person her entire life. Until the very end, when dementia took hold and left this agitated, confused, and bewildered woman in its wake. There were times when I did not recognize her because she was so agitated and obstinate, and that was not part of her persona otherwise.
Mm.
So towards the end...
It's unfortunate when they go down that road, yeah.
Yeah. Towards the end, when she was essentially nonverbal and in need of tremendous care for everything, I just remember thinking that the person that was withering in that bed was not the woman that I wanted to remember, nor was she the woman that the persona that had defined who she was my entire life. And I felt like her story needed to be told, not only to in tribute to her, but to everyone going through this journey. My mother earned her bachelor's degree in chemistry in 1945. So this is the kind of trailblazing, independent, and sweet person that defined who she was my entire life until the end.
Wow. You know, some mothers and daughters have a contentious relationship. There's just some chemistry about two women together who came out of, you know, the same genetic DNA. What was your relationship like with your mother? And I'm sure it had its ups and downs, but generally.
Well, if you allow me the sassy, rebellious teenage years and you take them out of the equation, because I was horrible, my mom and I really were very good friends and very close. She was, my dad was a great provider, but he was a behind the scenes kind of guy. He didn't make decisions about my brother and I, or he didn't, you didn't go to him for permission for anything. You went to my mom. So we were great until I turned probably 15, and the next 4 years were pretty ugly. I have no doubt. But, then after that, you know, I kind of matured, go through college, you know, just a little bit like my own daughter who was had her rough spell too, and then had kids and, you know, got married, had kids and my professional career. And we were really good. She was a strong woman, a good role model. I really am very grateful. If I could just pluck those ugly years out, I'm very grateful to have her. She really was wonderful.
Well, you know, since my mom had dementia, probably started, I mean, she's always been a dingy person. You know, I kind of liken her to a combination between Edith Bunker, Ruth on the Golden Girls, and Gracie Allen all rolled into one. So she's always been kind of, you know, out there. But I noticed when she was, I don't know, maybe about in her 80s, she started getting, you know, very forgetful, mm-hmm. and trying to hide it and, you know, mm-hmm. just trying to be funny using her reputation of being dingy. But after a while, you can just tell she couldn't hide it anymore. You know, it was mm-hmm. getting pretty serious because denial, and my mother-in-law, by the way, is kind of going through the same thing.
Oh.
She, you could talk to her for 3 hours and she seems perfectly normal. But then, you know, mm-hmm. you talk to her the next day, or the next hour, and she doesn't remember talking to you.
Right.
And she wants to call the police 5 times a day because people are stealing things.
Oh, my goodness.
She can't find this. She can't find that. And she hides them. And when we find them for her, oh, look, well, I didn't put that there, you know. Yep. It's like she's accusing you of doing it. Oh, really?
I do know, yes. Yes, my mother.
So because of that.
Go ahead. My mother accused the cleaning ladies of stealing her 2 pair of brown pants. My mom was the size of a postage stamp. She was a pixie she wasn't even 5 feet. And the two cleaning ladies, one was an Amazon woman. She was very tall. And the other one was very heavy. And when I confronted her on why on God's earth would these two people ever take your pants that you probably donated anyway, her response was very sinister, very hissy, very nasty. And she said, they take them for their kids. I have very nice things from Talbots and very sassy from Jacobson's, and they take them for their kids. I just, you know, my kids were of that kind of age at the time, and they wouldn't be caught dead in brown wool pleated lined pants from Talbots. So, I didn't, you know, and I should have, as a therapist, you know, my strength is neurology, and I should have seen the neurological decline for what it was. However, I saw my mom as a glass half full because I looked at her as this beautiful lady, which was my eyes, my lens as a daughter.
Yeah. My mom was the same way. You know, she was 4'11", but she always told people she was 5'0", you know.
Yes.
And then she started shrinking, the incredible shrinking woman. She had it down to like 5'7" or so. And she just, you know, short people just don't like to be short. I don't know why.
Well, not that but, short. Yeah, that's tough.
So anyway, but because of her dementia, you know, I saw this ad on Facebook, believe it or not, that said, we're doing a study to try to find the cause of dementia early on. And, you know, if you have any dementia in your household, please. So I joined, and every 6 months they give me this dementia test, which, you know, lasts about an hour. They ask you from very, very simple questions that in the end, my mother wouldn't even be able to answer, like who's the president, you know, what city do you live in? What's the address? Things like that. To more complex questions like, give you a list of 15 terms and then ask you to repeat back as many as you can remember. Then 5 minutes later, they'll ask you again. And then 5 minutes later, they'll ask you a list. And then they'll ask you about the second list. Then they'll go back to the first list and they'll ask you to count backwards from 100 in increments of 7. And so the good news is I'm just under the borderline to be concerned about. And I've gone 3 times and I'm not getting any worse because, you know, I'm trying to do new things. I sing at the senior center. I'm learning the piano again after like 30 years. I'm just trying to, you know, have a radio show. I'm doing improv. So just anything to help me, you know, think on my feet quickly, because they say those are all good things.
They are, and actually those are wonderful things to do. quoting Dr. Tansey, but he's not the only one to say it, what's good for the heart is good for the brain. And what I stress when I do presentations or opportunities like this is that there are so many variables that go into whether someone presents with a dementia or specifically Alzheimer's eventually. And the best that we can do until we have more information, which we desperately need, is to be social beings, to eat well and be physically active and get good rest. So the tip to your caregivers out there who are facing this burnout, that is so true about taking care of yourself first. And trying new things. So just living life. And in the event, you know, I apparently had a great aunt who died of Alzheimer's. I'm not positive. I never met her. But when my mother was more lucid, she did occasionally reference this person. And then my mom. So if it is where I'm headed, I'm going out kicking and screaming just like she did. My mom was very active. She had a hearing loss. She was deaf, essentially, which certainly worked against her as far as picking up on a lot of cues that are available to those who are part of the full complement of hearing world. But she walked and she liked to do things with other people. So I think in a way that she may have stalled the inevitable by being overall very positive and healthy, because her trip was very fast. From the time that her Alzheimer's was significant enough that she needed a considerable amount of care and her judgment was putting her in a situation of being unsafe, from that period of time to her actual passing was probably three-ish years. The Alzheimer's was present before, but it wasn't interfering to the point that she wasn't functional.
So how was her health otherwise? I mean, how old did you say she was, if you did, where you first started seeing some red flags? How was her health like in her 40s and so on?
Overall, very good. She had 2 cardiac stents, and that was it as far as anything. And then now that I think about it, there were some cardiac issues because she did have the carotid scraping done when she was older. But she never had a heart attack. She really wasn't on much medication. And the Meniere's disease, which is what took her hearing, probably in part was a catalyst from a car accident in which she would have hit her head. at least slightly when she was maybe, I'd have to go back, but roughly 25, 27, she was actually pregnant with me at the time and sadly lost her then 19-month-old son, David, in that car accident before seatbelts and car seats and car insurance and airbags. You have a tendency evidently to hold tight as she saw the accident coming, but you just turned to jello upon impact. And unfortunately she did lose her little guy. So I never knew him, but she was for the most part very healthy. She ate well, she provided a good exposure to others as far as keeping trim. She was active, articulate. She taught high school math and occasional class of advanced calculus from time to time. So she had all the bases covered pretty well. I lost your voice. If you can hear me, I can't
I'm
hear
sorry.
You.
I'm, oh, sorry,
you
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
There you are.
We are going to take a break, so don't go away. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Being a caregiver takes a special person with passion and compassion. But even you can become a little burned out from time to time. The Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show was developed to help you overcome obstacles, adversity, and burnout, as well as just having a place to rest, relax, and recharge your batteries. We've all been there, and you're not alone. Now, you can take the Caregiver's Caregiver with you. Get the top 25 radio shows in convenient form that plugs right into your USB car stereo or computer. Learn the techniques, tips, and encouragement we all need to better handle the day-to-day challenges. For around $1 per show, just $29.77, get the credit card-sized USB card to have with you anytime you need a caregiver's pick-me-up. Just go to DaveTheCaregiver'sCaregiver.com and order yours today. Go to DaveTheCaregiver'sCaregiver.com now. Consider it an investment in you and ultimately an investment in them. Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver radio program on Radio Star Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. With roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, it's about one-third of the population. That means everybody probably knows somebody caring for a loved one. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Mothers of special needs children, family members caring for elderly parents, spouses, siblings, or friends caring for disabilities such as Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer, stroke, heart disease, diabetes, muscular dystrophy, AIDS, autoimmune diseases, the list goes on. Join Dave and his guests every Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific on Radio Star Worldwide as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. You'll start feeling better in no time as you begin to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help you get through the day and to live life more fully and abundantly.
Caught me by surprise again. And we are back with Elaine Pereira. Elaine, tell me the name of your book one more time.
I Will Never Forget, A Daughter's Story of Her Mother's Arduous and Humorous Journey Through Dementia.
That is a great title. How did you come up with that title?
You know, people say all the time, I will never forget that story. I will never forget. I will never forget. I will never forget. Whatever it is, they think they'll never forget. And it just struck me that, and there was an incident with my mom just after she moved, after I moved her, I should say, from her senior center, independent living arrangement, to assisted living. And she was mobile then. It was an ugly move. They always are. Doesn't matter if you move across planets or across the street, it's going to be rough.
That's right.
And I got in there and I see her smiling face and she's talking to someone. There's lots of people around and I'm just so delighted that she's making a reasonably good adjustment, or at least that's what it looked like to me. She caught my face. Her face went sinister, dark, and angry. I got right up to her. I had no idea what the problem was. She says, one of her many phrases, "I have a bone to pick with you," which meant I was in trouble. She balanced on one leg, pirouetted on it, and kicked me in the butt with the other in front of 50 plus people. I was so embarrassed and humiliated, and wow, I had no idea why. And what the point was, 30 seconds later, we're in her room. It's just us. I'm seething. And I said, "Why did you kick me?" She looks at me after a big delay and says, "I did what?" She said, "I said, you kicked me. Why did you kick me?" "I don't know." And I just remember thinking, no truer words were ever spoken. That 30 seconds later, between seeing my face, which is, and being irritated by something enough to kick me, and which is not her, and then not be able to retrieve anything that was making her feel so upset with me. I'm sure it had to do with having moved her, but nevertheless, she couldn't articulate that. So that's partly why the title. We say it all the time. I'll never forget. And sometimes we do.
Wow, sounds like a wonderful book. When did it come out?
Thank you. Actually, the original came out in 2012. She died in 2011. And then it was the substance inside has not changed. The words have not changed at all. But I did do a new cover out that came out then in January of 2015. So,
yeah. So, what was your dad like? Was he the caregiver also, or were you the caregiver? Who was really in charge?
Well, my dad passed away before my mom's dementia was significant in any form.
What did he pass away of?
My dad had a stroke in 1995, which was moderate, and it launched my mother into her 9-year role as his selfless caregiver.
Story about a caregiver gone awry.
Yes. She did, for the most part, she did a great job about keeping my dad as physically active and on point as possible. And he sometimes referred to her as his taskmaster. I think she traveled with him, she drove, she tried to do her best to keep him as engaged and active and independent as possible. The flip side of that, though, which is for your audience of potentially burned out caregivers, is that my mother sort of took her role as my dad's caregiver as exclusively her responsibility. Here I go to visit them. We live 2 hours apart. I have the bachelor's master's degree in therapy. I know how to fold a wheelchair and put it in the trunk. And I'm a little taller than she is, even though I'm not very tall, but 3 inches is huge when you're dealing with leverage. And she just really got possessive about not letting people help. So we had a few conversations about her needing to let go of those reins and not put herself in this clearly tumultuous situation. And as things advanced, my dad declined and his skills were waning, his cognition, everything was just going amok. And that was in 2004. He died in April of 2004. But at January, I remember thinking it's either her or him. One or the other is not going to make it through 2004. Either my mother from just complete collapse and exhaustion, or my dad from the complications of the stroke. And he passed away in April of 2004. I lost you again.
Sorry. Was it hard losing two parents, and did you go through a grief process?
You know, my grief came later. I didn't really grieve for my dad's passing because of two things, I think. One, early on, he was debilitated enough that he sometimes very articulately and lucidly said that this quality of life was poor enough that if he had passed away from the stroke back when it first happened, that would have been better. And he wasn't being depressive or sinister or sarcastic. He was being very honest. So when he passed away, and he was, I'd have to go back, I think he was around 87 or so. But the other piece of this really is that my brother had announced his terminal diagnosis from cancer a year before my dad died. And my brother died in December of 2004 also. And I jumped right into protect my mother at all costs. So I think my own grief really, I did for my brother. I didn't for my dad as much, only because I felt like my mother had been released finally. One or the other was not going to make it. And I was hoping it wasn't both. So I had her. My dad lived through her in my eyes as the daughter of both. And then my brother. And that one was really hard.
I guess so. Yeah. Three loved ones. Wow. Are you still going through the grief process? I mean, I think of the story of the breakup, you know, the boyfriend, girlfriend. And one story in particular, you know, there's after like 5 years of being engaged, and then it breaks off. And then whose phone is that? Oh, sorry about that. And so all of a sudden she realizes that she gets over it, takes her 2-3 years to get over it, finds another guy, 3 years later, engaged, married, and so on. But before her wedding day, she hears that the old boyfriend just got married. And she thought she was over with him. It's been years, you know. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden she collapses. Oh. And through therapy, she finds out, you know, I thought he just didn't want to get married. It was all in the back of her mind. Mm-hmm. But what hit her was that he didn't want to marry me.
Right. You know?
And so sometimes we think we're through the grief. We think we're over it. It's been a decade. And then mm-hmm. some little thing triggers it. And then all of a sudden we're a basket case on the floor. Mm-hmm. So my question to you is, you know, do you have these moments where you think you're past something and then all of a sudden something will happen, or is on a holiday, or you come across something in the cupboard that all of a sudden you're a mess?
Occasionally for my mom, although she was almost 87 when she passed away, and if she materialized for just a minute to answer your question, she would chime in with, it really stunk how the last 2 or 3 years were. But she really did have 84 wonderful years, or 83 maybe. But that's a lot. That says a lot. She didn't linger for 20 years in this non-incapacitated state of mm-hmm. of confusion or physical limitations that were difficult. So in that sense, I don't grieve her loss. But yes, there are moments like I was at my daughter's in February. She had new towels, and they had this little band on them of a different stitching. And the point that she made is that if grandma were here, grandma would be creating an idea in her head of what she could cross stitch or what she could put artistically on these towels in this little band. And I was a mess, because it's true. My mother had outstanding hand skills, black work, carding, or things that I don't do. And her level of cross stitch was light years above what most of us do with kits. And she was, it's all independent. So yeah. It's very true. My daughter was right on point. And yeah, I definitely teared up. And occasionally something else will hit. It's, It's not always Mother's Day. It's not always her birthday. It's just something. Now, my brother's loss has been harder in that he was young. He wasn't 60. And his wife, my sister-in-law, had died about 4 years before my brother did, 4 or 5. And there are times when my husband and I know that we would have done things in retirement with my brother and his wife.
They were more like a friend.
Gracious person, but she wasn't always the, you know, the perfect round peg. Every now and then she was square peg. So she adored my husband. And my point is that piece of travel or opportunities to do things together, you know, that's not here. And yeah. We would have liked that because they were young.
You know, I like to answer a lot of the questions that I'm asked in my website and on my radio shows. And some of the practical things is a lot of these patients are driving long before any mention of dementia or diagnosis is made. Mm-hmm. That's usually where you first see the red flags is the driving. Long before even the caregiver is in denial about dementia, because you know they don't want to go there. Nobody wants to go there.
Right.
But after a while, you just can't deny it anymore. You know, when you get phone calls at 2 o'clock in the morning saying, you know, the clock says 2 o'clock, but it's not daylight outside, and you know something's wrong when they can't mm-hmm. even tell the difference between AM and PM. Like mm-hmm. I used to get those phone calls.
mm-hmm.
So how do you take the car keys away from someone who thinks they're perfectly okay and there's nothing wrong with me, and you know, the fireworks that usually result from such a conversation?
I love this question. And I do presentations, and it comes up almost every time. So one of the things that I say is that to families, because it's usually going to be a son or a daughter, niece that has to deal with this, less so a paid caregiver, of course.
Right. And of course, they're smart enough to never go driving with them.
Yeah. I don't ever want to hear from someone or learn that someone who should be getting more care but refuses it, or moves into an assisted living or a memory care, won't budge, that they are injured from a fall down the stairs or cooking or anything like that.
Or they kill someone on the road.
And that's where the line is. However, if you feel that your parent or whatever the relationship is, spouse even, should not be driving, it is on you as the caregiver and the lucid one to find a way to get those keys. Now, I wrote an article about some creative ways that people have used. One that came up just recently is that these two daughters asked for some suggestions. And they told me that the father hasn't driven, but he keeps the car keys in his pocket, and he pats the pocket where he can hear and feel the keys all the time. And I said to her, then what you need to do is sometime when you can get the one key to the car, make a duplicate or substitute it with something that looks similar, or just another key, depending on whether he's really staring at them or he's just patting them because he likes them in his pocket. Then he doesn't have the key to the car. Or if you have, I don't know how to disable an engine, but most people know somebody who does. So there's a way that the key will not engage the vehicle if you can't get the key.
Unless he's a mechanic and knows how to fix it.
Well, you know what? If he's a mechanic and knows how to fix it, chances are the dementia's not that bad, depending on what you did. I don't know.
It's, you know, sometimes it's bad in certain areas,
yes,
but it's
true.
Good
and
it's excellent in other areas.
Because allowing someone to drive that you know better shouldn't be is a deal breaker.
I like the idea of a similar looking key because nobody can tell what the teeth
You know, exactly. I mean, they're, figure out what it is. Like in this particular, and I asked this, one of the daughters, I said, please let me know, you know, what success you had. Because for the first time, they had what they thought would be a viable solution. And I did get an email from her just recently, because I was in Cincinnati last week to do this presentation, that they had had success. It wasn't about him taking the keys out and analyzing that he actually had a car key. It was about him feeling those in his pocket, and that's all he needed.
No, it's a great idea. And I have other questions I want to ask, but we're going to take a quick break first, so don't go away.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is a touching story about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resembled that of both a Martha Stewart and Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. She met her husband Dave 21 years earlier. They had a wonderful fairy tale storybook-like courtship that soon culminated in their marriage. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where after 10 years, she received two black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left, finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn. She started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought them all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, their love then produced Rebecca. They all had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope that everything happens for a reason and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone that meets her. Best-selling author Lynn Barrington says, "If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story from the heart. It is inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light." 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch, says, "Charlene just won't let the promises of God go, and she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror. As the Bible states, you will be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through." Order your copy today from the author's website, onearmoneleg100words.com. And Dave and Charlene will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy.
And we're back with Elaine Pereira, author of the book I Will Never Forget. And Elaine, I wanted to ask you a couple more questions before we wrap it up, and then you can tell us how people can get a hold of you and how they can buy your book. How hard is it to write a book? Are you an author? Are you a good writer? I mean, there's a lot of caregivers out there who says, I'm going to write a book. How did you do it?
I Will Never Forget is my debut memoir, and it is both the first and probably the last. This story, I mean, I'm good at writing. I've written reports, and I've written stories, and I've made it through English class and all that. It was never on my bucket list, never to write a book. But memoirs, as other authors of memoirs have said, and I agree, that sometimes they just pour out of you. You have no research to speak of. You don't have to make sure that the building that you remember in your fictional story in Germany was built at what year, what kind of brick, none of that. It just pours out because it comes from the heart. I have no doubt that it started out as a cathartic release for me because I was so determined to remember all the wonderful things that defined my mom while she was still, you know, waning away fairly quickly. But it was probably half done, started out more as a journal type of entry. when I came to visit her, there were times when she just wasn't, there just wasn't anything there. There wasn't anything for me to do. I could stroke her hair, she was there, but not there, if you know what I mean. I know you do. Yeah. I know you all do. And I felt like whatever time I had to visit was for her. So slowly, I just started, I'm a Energizer bunny. I don't sit still well. I have to be doing something. So I started writing about stories that defined her in my eyes, because I was kind of the challenging child and definitely had all kinds of, there's a lot of sand that I kicked for a long time. And she handled me and all of them very well. So I was writing about Christmas and Easter Bunny and all cookies, anything I could think of that were special in our relationship or the relationship in the family. And gradually interwove, when I went to actually write the book, the experiences of her as a individual declining from Alzheimer's. So no, I didn't set out to write it, but it sort of moved past cathartic. And I felt when I was not quite finished, maybe three quarters of the way, I certainly was well past the core of it. I felt like this was a story that needed to be told. And I just want to add that one of the other reasons that I did write this is I take absolutely nothing away from Still Alice. And I'm grateful that a book about early onset is so, people are so aware of it, and that Julianne Moore won the Academy Award. You know, it's all great exposure.
Great movie.
Yeah. Right. But I didn't get to read very often at the time I read that book. And I put an investment as a reader into a story that I believe is based on true life, only to find out after finishing the book that Alice is not a real character. So I had empathized with Alice and her husband and her family and her friends, only to find out that although she's a perfect embodiment of the Pat Summits of the world, she didn't really exist. And then when my mother escaped her assisted living facility and all the other crazy, goofy, and bizarre things that she did, in 25-degree temperatures for 5.5 hours in Michigan one night. That chapter is called Houdini Mom. It's one of my favorites. But anyway.
Where does your story start with her life or her dementia?
And let me just finish this one thought. Okay. I just felt like truth was stranger than fiction. Mm-hmm. That what my mother went through, what most people with Alzheimer's, if you think about it, go through, as well as their families, are simply so bizarre and unique that you could never get away with writing them and expect someone to believe you if it was fiction. Mm-hmm. So the book starts out actually in 1960 when I was 8, and this snippy thing I did at Christmas time and my mother's handling of it and how beautiful my mother made Christmas, in that her generation grew up through the Great Depression. My mother was 5 when that happened. She remembers and talked about bartering. Her parents did, not her. So, but everybody lost everything. There was nothing to have. And it influenced all of us in our generation if your parent went through that. And then at the end of that chapter, which is the very first one, was Christmas in 2009. My mother couldn't write a check. She couldn't remember how to spell my daughter's name, her granddaughter. There were lots of red flags then, but they were very isolated. So she had a funky Christmas and she didn't pack any socks. But oh well, you know, I didn't really think too much about it until these things kept happening. Yeah, so.
You know, I read a book, and I'm sorry I can't remember the name of it, but.
I will never forget.
It talks about moments that the best thing you can do for an Alzheimer's patient is give them moments, a 30-second moment, a 1-minute moment, a 5-minute moment, a 10-second moment. And what does that mean? That means try to connect with them about memories. Hey, remember when we used to, you know, be 5 years old and we used to make tents underneath our sheets in the bedroom and we turned the whole place into, you know, whatever. And then all of a sudden you'll see this person who's been out to lunch, you know, for years, their eyes will light up and all of a sudden you've made a connection. She's there. She starts laughing uncontrollably because she remembers. She found that file and then it's gone. You know, it's almost like the movie The Notebook, where just come on, let's get away, let's get out of here, let's take a drive, and then all of a sudden, who are you? What are you doing in my room? You know, and most of the time, they'll feel that warm and fuzzy feeling all day long, or all week long, because and they can't explain it. But I would encourage you: don't get upset that she can't remember your name. Don't get upset that, you know, she can't feed herself or whatever it is that upsets you because you're taking it too personal. Mm-hmm. Just try to have those moments and share them. And even if they only last 5 seconds, 10 seconds, what do you think about that?
I agree that we need to savor those moments. And occasionally, even the most advanced person with Alzheimer's, mm-hmm. the clouds will part and they will be very lucid for a brief amount of time. So definitely embrace it and capture it. The only thing I'd like to supplement your story with is that sometimes your connection with someone probably won't be through just using words. Language falls apart very fast. It's one of the first indicators because, as we know, with someone with Alzheimer's, what they say is inaccurate, shows poor judgment, is confused, word substitution, etc., and it continues to decline rapidly. So my advice when I do presentations is, it is not on them to validate us that they remember who we are. Don't walk into your parents' room, if it's your parent, or whatever the relationship is, and say, "Hi, Mom, who am I?" You are setting them up for failure. Tell them who you are. "Hi, Mom. It's Elaine, your daughter. How are you?" And give them, think of it as an open book test. Give them the information so they can help retrieve the loop. The other piece of this is our senses, the five senses, are very powerful connections. Touch, sound, or hearing, which my mother didn't have because she was deaf, but many people do react in a positive way to music from their generation. Taste, smell. How many of us have gone loopy on fresh baked bread or cookies or pasta sauce or whatever it is? And then taste, sight. So if you're going to retrieve that picture about making tents out of sheets, see if you can't bring a sheet or a picture of the person you did that with. If it's them, maybe you can bring that. So, and then point out to them, "Mom, this is your granddaughter, you know, Angie. This is your grandson, David. This is your friend, Marcia." Give them that information. Don't ask them to retrieve it for you. They may indeed have this place in their mind that they fully get that that's their friend, but their words have failed them, and we rely upon their words. So I've written articles about that, and I'm going to have a CEO course coming up on better ways to maintain connections than using language.
And I would supplement one more thing to what you just said, and it's the use of music. Get some headphones and put on, you know, big band or whatever her favorite song was, or the song that they played at her wedding or something like that, or his wedding, you know, whatever is the case. Music is very, very powerful.
Yes.
Transcends language.
Yes, and touch.
Yes. Well, I can't believe that we are at the end of our hour and how fast things have gone. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Get a hold of you or buy your book?
Okay. First of all, I welcome all communications. So my email is Elaine P at iwillneverforgetbook.com. And the book is available on Amazon under either my name, Elaine Pereira, or obviously the title's probably easier, I Will Never Forget. And if you want a signed copy, I do that too. Just send me an email. If you have a question, a comment, anything, I really welcome the communication.
So it's Elaine at I Will Never Forget.
Elaine P.
Oh, Elaine P. Okay.
Right.
Elaine P. at I Will Never Forget
book.com. That's right.
So I'll post that. Hopefully I got that right.
But my website is iwillneverforgetbook.com, and on it is the email address too. But it's not hard.
.com.
Thank you.
Hopefully there's no typos in that one.
Yeah, that'll get us up.
So you're on Amazon, you said?
Yes.
Book. And how long has it been out?
It came out in 2012, the original, in May. And then there's been a revised cover that came out in January of 2015.
Oh. And did you self-publish?
I did. I self-published.
Sales are doing good. Got some reviews on Amazon, et cetera.
Yes. Yeah. It's a 4.7 star, something like that, on Amazon. 340 reviews. Yeah, it's gone well. I think it resonates because it reads like a novel, mm-hmm. not a how-to book. Sure. Not that those aren't very helpful, but that's not what this is.
Sure.
And it's so real and so raw. And I made a lot of mistakes. So other caregivers, I'm not on this, big pedestal for being the perfect person. I should have known better because I had a neurology background, but I just looked at her and thought things were just goofy. Yeah, they were way past goofy. So.
Well, thank you again for coming on
the
show.
Thank you.
You were a joy. And just a reminder, all our live shows become recorded podcasts on our website and on YouTube, caregiver.com. And videocasts, like I said, are on Blob and on YouTube. And when you're on my site, please don't forget to take that short quiz, Are You a Candidate for Burnout? To assess where you are in the burnout process and get a copy of my free book. And we have another book coming out. It's called, let's see if I can remember what it is because we keep changing the title. It's My Life 2, When to Say Yes and When to Say No in Long-Term Caregiving. Mm-hmm. So thank you again, and we will see you next Tuesday and every Tuesday at noon Pacific time.
Thank you for listening to the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program with Dave Nassani. Join Dave every Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific, or catch the program anytime 24/7 right here on Radio Star Worldwide.